Hey, we're beginning on the top of Pezayin Amaral, two lines down. Pasuk says, "Ktiv vechapat lechem," that Avram offers them a small meal. Just, "I'll give you some bread. I'll take care of you." Uchtiv, and as soon as he leaves them, after they acquiesce to stay by him and eat by him, vela bakar rats Avraham. Then Avram starts to prepare this huge feast for them. Amar Rabbi Elazar mikan shetzadikim omrimat vosim harbe. That tzaddikim offer, speak about a little, but they do a lot. So over here, Abraham offers them some small repast, and instead, he brings them this massive feast. On the other hand, Rishayim omrim harbe, vafilu ma'at enunsim. Whereas the Rishayim offer and speak about it a lot, but they do very little. Min alan, who's that from? Me Ephron. When it comes to the selling of marat amachpelah, mi korektiv eretz arba meot shekel kesef. So truthfully, it even starts out a little before this. The Gemara only brings in the middle of the exchange between Avram and Ephron. Originally, Ephron offers it for him for free. And then in the end, he offers it, what the Gemara brings here, for Eretz, Arba Meot Shekel Kesef. All right, 400 Shekel Kesef, what's the big deal? And then it comes to when Avram had to pay for it. It says, Vayishma Avram el Ephron, Vayishkol Avram el Ephron et ha-kesef, asher diber bozne b'nei chet, Arba Meot Shekel Kesef, over l'socher. So this is the point that the Gemara is focusing on, is this over the socher. He didn't just give him shekel kesef. He didn't just give him the money that he had requested. He had to give him over the socher. Over the socher, loosely translated, is that it's well accepted. It's coinage that everyone accepts. Delo shakumine elekantere. You can look in Rashi. Mishkal godol shekorim centiner meyamane. It's a large coin that has 100 zuz in it. And you can see from the word that he's bringing is centiner is from centi, from 100. And so it was a much larger coin. And then in the next Rashi says, over the socher melameid, shebachom akom ayem itkabel b'shekel, v'ika de'uchte de'kari le'kantir tikla. Because that's what the Gemara says, de'ika duchta de'kari le'tikla kantira. There's some places they call the shekel a kantira. And Rashi's girsa is just the opposite, which is that there are in some places that they call the kantira shekel. The Marsha points out this is probably the likely the better girsa that Rashi has, because the Gemara in Bukhorot also has that girsa. And what the Gemara is indicating is that Ephron just asked for shekel kesef. Now shekel kesef can mean shekel, and that would have been the standard selah that you find throughout the Torah and the Mishnah. Whereas Ephron in the end demanded that he give him kantere. And that's what the Gemara says over here, that in some places they call the kantere shekel. So since this much larger coin has the name shekel in other places, he insisted that that's what he give him, that he give him the shekel. That's what I meant originally. If that is really the case, then it is 25 times what he had asked for originally. The sell has 4 dinar, and this has 100 dinar, 100 zuz in it. 25 times the price, if that's what he asked for. Or the way that Rashi and Chumash brings it down, is over la socher. These are large coins that are accepted by everyone, which again means that he didn't accept just your regular local seller. He wanted the international seller, an international shekel. But either way, Ephron up front offers free, then offers for 400, and in the end demands over the socher. That's what it means. Rishayim, omrim harbe, they talk a lot, vosim ma'at, they do very little. And now the next piece here, continuing in the story of the Hachnasat Orchim of Avraham, it says, Ktiv kemach, Ktiv solet. It's hard to understand because the Pasuk says that when Avram goes in, he speaks to Sarah. It says, Vayimeher Avram o'ela el Sarah. Vayomer mari shlosh si'im kemach solet lushi vasi ugot. So from that, it would sound like kemach solet means that the solet is modifying the kemach, which means what type of flour? Fine flour. The way the Gemara reads it is that it was different options. Ktiv kemach, ktiv solet. Am Rabbi Yitzchak mikan sheisha tzara inneha be'orchim. That a woman in general is more miserly when it comes to the guest, yoter min ha'ish, more than the man. So over there, what they're suggesting is that Avram asked for solet, and then Sarah was going to provide kemach. It's very hard to read that into the psukim. The only way you can read it is if you maybe punctuate the pasuk a little differently, which is, when he comes in, he says, hey, mer Avram o'il el sarabi omari, shlosh si'im. Make for us something. And then she says, kemach. Should I make it out of kemach? And Avram says, no, solet. So that's the only way maybe you could fit it into the pasuk, that she had proposed originally that it was kemach. Sorry, Menu proposed it was kemach. And Avram Avinu answers, no, solet. Otherwise it's hard to read, because otherwise it looks like it's a singular noun phrase, and not two separate words. And again, they're adjacent to each other in the pasuk. It's not like she prepared something different than that which she asked for. Div, then it says right after that, Lushiv asiu got, that you should make them into cakes. Uchtiv, vayikach chema v'chalav u'ben bakar, v'ilulechem lo aite l'kamayu. So after Avram made the request of Sarah to make the lechem, he never presents that to the malachim. When it says that he comes to present the malachim, he brought the butter, the milk, the meat, and no bread to be found there. So it makes it sound like that whatever Sarah had prepared was never presented. The other possibility is it's taken for granted. Lechem is a basic staple of food. It's also what he offered them up front, which is, why don't you stop by vechapet lechem sadu libchem? So that was already offered them. So that the pasuk doesn't have to tell us about, but rather the things that he added beyond the lechem is what has to tell us about. But the Gemara here sees something significant in the fact that he didn't present the lechem. Amar Ephraim Maksha, Tamido shel Rabbi Meir. So Ephraim Maksha, who was probably from this location, the Talmid of Rabbi Meir, Mishmei de Rabbi Meir, in the name of Rabbi Meir, Avram Avinu ochel chulin b'tara haya. Amar Avinu was makpid to eat his chulin only b'tara. V'Sarah Imenu oto yom pirsa nida. And on that day, Sarah Imenu began to menstruate again. Remember, she had gotten past the age of menopause, was unable to conceive or have children. And in order for her to have, for facilitate her ability to have children here, part of what the Malachim inform her is that she is going to be young again, and that she's going to now begin to menstruate and become a young woman once again. That's what Chazal see in the lack of lechem being presented to the Malachim. So, Vayomru elav, ayei sarei ishtecha, Vayomer hinei ba'el. So the pasuk says about the malachim that they ask when they inquire about the well-being of Sarah. So why are they asking about Sarah if in the end they never speak to Sarah? Even when they inform them of the news that she's going to have a baby, they don't speak directly to Sarah, they speak to Abraham. So what is the need to inquire about Sarah? Ayei Sarah ishtecha, where is Sarah your wife? And he says that she's in the tent. This you see that Sarah Imenu was very modest. She was not in front of the guests. Even when it was time to prepare or to present the food to the guests, she still was not in the public sphere. It was Abraham that was interacting with them. Sarah was in the background. Amrav Yehuda Amrav, Vitei Rabbi Yitzchak, Yodim Ayu Malachei Asheret, Sarah Imenu Bo'ohel Haita. They knew that. They knew that information. They didn't need to ask, where is Sarah? Obviously, Sarah was there. They were coming to inform Avram about the fact that Sarah's going to have a baby. And so they know that Sarah's there, and they know that she's in the Oel. Elamai Boel. So then why did they inquire of Abraham as to the whereabouts of Sarah? G'day l'chavava al bala. In order to make her beloved on her husband, to point out a feature about his wife that maybe he took for granted or he didn't notice. So they inquire about his wife, and his answer, even though it's a standard pat answer, as well as it was obvious, nevertheless, just the fact that he articulates it brings it to the forefront of his thought, and therefore it makes him recognize this beautiful aspect about his wife. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Chanina amar kedei l'shager la koshel bracha, in order to give her a bracha, meaning that you ask or inquire about the individual, in order to give her a koshel bracha, the Gemara in Brachot speaks about the idea that after they used to bench, it's a story by Rav Nachman, that after they benched, he used to send the kos of benching to his wife to drink, because that was a kosher bracha. So the Malachim here wanted to include Sarah in the bracha that was associated with the meal, whether it was at the time of benching, or if it was just in the fact that when they're going to speak to Abraham, they want Sarah to be included in the news and the excitement that they are bringing. So Tani Mishum Rabbi Yose, Lama Nakud Alayo Shebe'elav. So here, the pasuk says, Vayamru elav, ayei Sarah ishtecha, vayomer hinei ba'ohel. On the word elav, there are dots, not on the entire word, but on the aleph, yud, vav, there are dots on top of it. So the Gemara wants to know, what are those dots on top of the word elav supposed to tell us about this situation? When it says, limda Torah derech eretz, the Torah is teaching you proper etiquette, shishael adam achsanya shalom. Person should always inquire about their hosts. Based on the pasuk, it would mean that when you see the husband, you should ask the husband about his wife when you are coming to be hosted. V'amar Shmuel ein sholim b'shlomei isha klal. that one is not allowed to inquire as to the well-being of a woman at all. It says, Ayadei Baala, Shaini, if you're doing it through her husband, that is fine. So Rashi over here says, there are a number of things to discuss, because Tosafot disagrees with Rashi on many of these issues. The first thing is, in terms of the dots on top, it says, Alayo Shebei Lav, Ayo Shelo Nakud, Valamid Eni Nukuda, Limda Torah Derech Eretz, which is, Vainu Nukuda Ta Ayo, Teloye Tzrichim Li She'el, Diodim Ayu Shehi Ba'ol. They didn't need to ask about it because they knew she was in the oel. V'chol nikuda ukerita teva she'ena ela d'drasha v'drosh mina derech eretz. So Rashi says the dots mean it's as if the word's not there. And if the word's not there, then what's the point of this whole exchange? So he said that, of course, they knew that she was in the tent. And therefore, when they asked v'yomru elav, they were saying v'yomru aye sarah ishtecha. They were just simply asking where was Sarah. Again, unnecessary. What's the elav? Why do they speak to Abraham? That's how Rashi learns it. Rashi learns it, the fact that they spoke to him is because we want to learn from that, and also that the proper etiquette is to ask about the wife to the husband. So that's what you learn from the word, which would otherwise be absent because of the dots on top of the word. And then you have the limud, which is the etiquette. And Rashi says, Ayadei Bala, that when you speak to the husband, you should ask and inquire as to the well-being of the wife or the woman of the house. So that's what Rashi says. Number one, the word was unnecessary, which triggers a drasha. And number two is that you ask the husband as to the well-being of the wife. Tosafot disagrees with both points. We'll talk about the second first. Ayadei bala, haynu dafka lishol aye plonit. That is to ask, where is she? But to inquire as to her well-being, that is not allowed, even through her husband. So the Balei Tosafot don't see this as permission to ask about the well-being, which is what Shmuel said. Ain sholim b'shlomi shaklal. Period. You're not allowed to ask about the well-being of the woman. Over here, it was different because you were asking about her whereabouts, not about her well-being. And therefore, that's the difference that's brought up here. The language in the Gemara seems to support Rashi much more strongly, which is that despite Shmuel saying that you cannot inquire as to the well-being of the woman, you can do that through the husband. And that's what Rashi says, that you can ask or inquire about the well-being of the individual. There are those that want to say here that it's also unidirectional, which is that you only can ask the husband about the well-being of the wife. You don't do the reverse, which is you don't ask the wife about the well-being of the husband. The Marsha disagrees and believes that you can ask in either direction because it's Derech Eretz. If Derech Eretz kadma Torah, and that means that Derech Eretz, as long as there's no real violation over here, should override what is otherwise Derech Tzniut, which is not to speak to a woman, but in the context of either asking her husband as to her well-being or asking her about the well-being of her husband, those are permitted. And so the Marsha sees that as basic Derech Eretz, and therefore it's permitted despite the restriction against speaking to the woman. The second thing is the drasha of the word elav. The Balei Tosafot bring over here, Rashi and Chumash actually brings this down, which is that the principle that we use with regards to dots on top of the word is, depending on which is more. Are there more letters with dots, or are there more letters without dots? Whichever is the majority, that is what remains, and the other letters drop away. So here in the word elav, three out of the four letters in the word have dots on them. That means that we're going to keep the letters with the dots, and we're going to drop away the one letter. So here you have aleph, yud, vav that have dots on them, the lamid drops away. And that leaves you with the word v'yomru ayo, which is the word that would be left over. And the drosha is based on that, which is what's brought here in the Balei Tosafot. Shem shamru l'Avraham ayei Sarah. Just like they asked Abraham, ayei Sarah ishtecha, kach amru l'Sarah ayo Abraham. Similarly, they asked Sarah about the whereabouts of Abraham. V'achanami avi perushocha. And that's the explanation over here, that the ayo is coming to teach you this derech eretz, that you inquire as to the well-being of the spouse of the individual that you are speaking to. And again, over here, Tosafot mentions the bidirectional nature of this, that they spoke to Abraham about Sarah, and they spoke to Sarah about Abraham. And that's the proper way to conduct oneself. That's the Derech Eretz that the Marsha mentions. And the Tosafot, in rejecting Rashi's explanation, says, according to Rashi, the das should have been on the word ayeh, because that's the key element of what the Gemara is speaking about according to Rashi, which is ayeh sara ishtecha. If you wanted to make a drasha on a word and say eliminate that word, and the word being there makes it into a drasha, it should have been on the word ayeh, because that would have taught us to ask or inquire about the wife of the individual. Plus, it would be kedei lechavava bala. The fact that it's on the word eilav indicates that it's teaching us something completely new or different, which is this idea that you inquire about the well-being of the spouse in both directions. Now, just as an aside, I always mention this because it's a beautiful idea, because the pasuk now says, Vayamru Eilav. So they said to him, Ayei Sarah Ishtecha. And the other way around, it would say, with the use of the drush of the dots, it would say, Vayamru Ayo, where is Abraham when they spoke to Sarah? But if you look at the pasuk the way it's written now, Vayamru Ayo, they said to Abraham, where are you holding? What's going on with you, Abraham? The answer to the question is, Ayei Sarah Ishtecha. Where is Sarah, your wife? Meaning that the woman as the Akarat Abayit, the woman as the, in a sense, spiritual leader of the home, dictates the position of the man spiritually. And therefore, the Malachim, in inquiring about Abraham's well-being and where he was holding spiritually, Vayimru Ayo, where are you? The answer to that question is, Ayei Sarah Ishtecha. Where is Sarah, your wife, holding? Because the wife determines what her husband dedicates his time to, what is the ruach that permeates the house, what she puts emphasis on. The woman has a huge role in dictating the direction of the family, especially in the spiritual realm. And so therefore, it's a beautiful, a nice drasha here on the pasuk, based on this drasha of changing the word eilav to ayo, that instead of reading it as inquiry about each spouse, it's an inquiry as to where Avraham is holding, and the answer is where Sarah is holding. So now the Gemara continues and says, Achrei bloti haita li edna. After I've already aged, I'm going to go back to being young again. Amar Rav Chista, achar shenitbala habasar, rabu akmatim. After my skin has already loosened, it's lost its tautness, and now it has lots of folds in it, meaning that you've aged. Nitadena basar, v'nitpashtu akmatim. All of a sudden that the skin is going to come soft again, and all the wrinkles and folds are going to go away, are going to smooth out. And then the beauty will return to its place. So here you have Sarah's surprise, or her rhetorical question is, how could it be that a woman of my age, who's already wrinkled and has lost the elasticity of her skin and the softness or suppleness of the skin with age, how's it going to be that all that's going to be reversed? Chtiv v'adoni zakein. And it says that, also, besides that, my husband is very old. Uchtiv v'ani zakanti. When Hashem informs Abraham as to what Sarah says, it says that she said, ani zakanti, I am old. Delo motiv HaKadosh Baruch Hu k'damra yihi. Hashem does not report to Abraham, does not ask Abraham about what she really said, but rather he changes what she said in order not to upset Abraham about her statement. Tanit Beit Rabbi Shmuel. From this you learn, Gadola Shalom, that keeping peace between individuals, or between spouses especially, is so important, Shafilo Kodesh Baruch Hu Shina Bo, that even Hashem changed what was said in order to prevent a problem arising between Avraham and Sarah. Because Sarah, when she says over here, Vatisach Sarah Bikirba Leimor, Achrei Vloti, Ata Liyadna, Va'adoni Zakein, my husband is old. Then when Hashem approaches Abraham, he says, "Vayom Hashem al Abraham, lama zet zachakat sara lemor, afum namelei va'ani zakanti." And I have aged. So he doesn't report what Sarah really said, which was Abraham has aged, but rather that Sarah is saying about herself that I have aged and I am way too old to have children. So you see from this the ability to change mipnei shalom. So two things to say about this. One of which is, if you remember, we saw earlier in the Masechta in Bava Metzia and Daf Chav Gimel Amud Bet, the permission, there are three things that a Talmud Chacham is allowed to lie about. Even if they tell the truth about everything, in these three areas, they have permission not to tell the truth. And we had a list over there. Behind it, Tlat Mili, Avdei Rabbana, Demishanu Milayu, B'Masechet, B'Puria, U'Bishbiza. Those were the three things that we mentioned over there, which is by their learning, where they slept, or ubishpiza, and who was feeding them or taking care of them. Again, we discussed all the details over there. When we did that Gemara, we noted that this Gemara over here is absent. This Gemara doesn't mention. This is another thing where a person is allowed to lie in order to keep the peace. How come that's not amongst the list of those three items that's there? So we discussed why. One of the reasons was that it's an overarching theme, which is that Mipnei HaShalom is the reason for everything. That's not the particular reason in those three cases. Those three cases are subsets of Shalom. But the overarching theme of why you're allowed to change the truth is, or to bend the truth, is in order to preserve the Shalom, is in order to keep things peaceful, in order to keep good social interactions between individuals. As well as the fact that it might be that the list on Pamatziach of Gimel Amud Bet was a list that only referenced the Talmud Chacham, who tells the truth everywhere else, then this is permission to bend the truth in these three instances. Over here, with regards to Shalom, this might be a broader heter for anyone, to use, which is that when it comes to Shalom, people have to be careful. That sometimes it's not worth telling the truth because of the discord that it might sow, and therefore you have a right to bend the truth in order to keep the Shalom. There are Rishonim, the Ramban in particular, that says that when Hashem reports what Sarah said, he did not totally fabricate what Sarah said. She says over here, the Pasuk never says, V'ani zakanti. Pasuk says, Acharei bloti ata li edna, and then V'aduni zakein. Then Hashem reports that she said, Ani zakanti, that I am old. So it looks like Hashem totally changed what she said. She said, Ani zakein, and then Hashem says, V'ani zakanti. The Ramban points out that that's not the case. She said both of them. She said, Acharoi bloti hatyalini edna, which means anizakanti, I'm already old. That's the statement about herself. The second statement is Aduni Zakein. When Hashem reports what Sarah said, he only includes one of the two things she said. So actually that changes the nature of what is permitted over here. May not be that you can lie outright and change the truth, but rather that you can simply disclose partial information. You don't have to give full disclosure. And that's what Hashem does. He only discloses what Sarah said about herself. He doesn't disclose what she said about Abraham. Again, that would narrow the scope of this heter to lie or to bend the truth for Shalom, that it's not that you simply just make something up or you change it, but rather you selectively disclose what was said in order to keep the peace, or you use omission rather than commission to create the peace. Although we do find at the end of Sefer Bereishit, when it came to Yosef and his brothers, that the brothers over there also make up a whole story about their father in order to make sure that Yosef doesn't take revenge on them. They say that their father gave them certain instructions which were never true or never given, and they make up this story in order to try to keep the peace. There they might have thought that it wasn't just about keeping the peace, they might have really thought that their lives were in danger, because Yosef might take retribution on them. So there it may be a different reason why they fabricated the story, and not necessarily related to what we're saying over here. Right, so now the Gemara continues and says, "Vatitzachek Sarah bikirba ve'aduni zakein." Says that Sarah laughs and says that Aduni zakein uchtei v'yomer Hashem Avram v'ani zakanti. So again, that's a summary of what we just saw, that Hashem changes that which was said. Vatomer mimilel Avraham henika banim lisarah. So that is the shira or poem that is said at the time that they are weaning Yitzchak. So it's a little strange because it says, Mi melele Abraham, henika banim Sarah. So henika banim Sarah is in the plural, that she nursed multiple children. You might ask, kama banim henika Sarah. How many children did Sarah nurse? She only has one child. So how did she nurse multiple children? Amar Rabbi Levi, oto yom shegamal Abraham et Yitzchak beno. The day that Abram weaned Yitzchak, asas si'uda gidola, made a great feast. All the nations, the neighbors, were all spreading rumors, casting aspersions on the fact that this was really their child. You see these two old people over here, this old couple, she'avio sufi min ashuk, they brought in some abandoned child from the market, and then they claim it as their own child. In their day, probably even way into the time of the Gemara, families that could not take care of a child, or families who had a child that had physical deformities or difficulties, used to abandon the child. They used to just leave the child there. So the claim of the people was that Abraham and Sarah just simply picked up one of these abandoned children, and that's what they're claiming is their child. In order to cover up or reinforce this lie, they are making now a big party as if they're weaning the baby. So Masa Avram Avinu. What did Avram Avinu do? Alach v'zimen kol gdolei ador. Avram invites all the big shots of the generation, all the people that he interacted with. Sarai imenu zimnat nishotehem. And Sarai invited the women. V'cholachat v'achat evia b'naima. All the women came with their children, their young sucklings. Umnikta lo evia. But they didn't bring their nurses. Nasanes b'sarai imenu. The miracle happened that her breasts then opened up like two springs, and she was able to nurse all the children over there. I don't know if you have to go that far, but simply the fact that she nursed any other child was an indication of the fact that she really did have this child. The ability to nurse is the product of giving birth. It's a side effect of the hormones that are generated at the time of pregnancy. And therefore, the only way that she could have been a nursing mother at that point in time was if she had actually given birth to a child. The fact that she nurses any other child is a proof to the fact that she had given birth. Okay, we'll give you Sarah. She's only 90. So she had the baby. Avram's 100? He can't be the father of the baby. It's a little strange claim because generally men had the ability to be fertile for a longer period than women in general. But nevertheless, they're claiming now that maybe she's the mother, but Avram's not the father. The way that the Midrash Chazal bring it is because it's immediately after the incident with Abimelech, when Sarah was taken away to Abimelech. And therefore, the rumors that are circulating are that the baby is really Abimelech's baby and not Abraham's baby. Miyad nepach pastar panim shel Yitzchak v'nidmel Abraham. Right after that, the features of Yitzchak's face become exactly like Abraham's, or in essence, Yitzchak looks exactly or identical to Abraham. And so in that way, there's no question as to who the father is. Now that Sarah's nursing, it's clear that she had a baby and she was pregnant. And now that Abraham has a child that looks exactly like him, you can't question the fact that he is the father of the child. But chukulam ba'amru, and then everybody rejoins and says, Avraham holidit Yitzchak. Avraham gave birth to Yitzchak. Why was it so obvious that Ele todot Avraham, Avraham holidit Yitzchak? Why does the Pasuk say that Avraham gave birth to Yitzchak? Because it was obvious from their appearance that Yitzchak was the son of Avraham. I mean, that you didn't even question the fact that he was the son of Avraham. Ad Avraham lo yazikna. Until the time of Avraham, people did not age. Man dava bayle mishtoi ba'ade Avraham, mishtoi ba'ade Yitzchak. But that caused a problem, because those that wanted to speak to Abraham used to go to speak to Yitzchak. Bade Yitzchak, mishtai bade Abraham. And when they went to speak to Yitzchak, they would speak to Abraham. They looked like identical twins, because Yitzchak looked exactly like Abraham. Abraham wasn't aging. If that's the case, then they're going to look like identical twins. So people couldn't tell them apart, and they would talk to Abraham as if he was Yitzchak, or they'd speak to Yitzchak as if he was Abraham. At Abraham, boyrachme baba zikna. So therefore, Abraham davens to Hashem that there should be aging in order to differentiate the parent from the child. Shenemar v'Abraham zaken baba yamim. So this is the first time in the Torah that we hear about someone aging. So the Gemara is taking from that that this was a new phenomenon, that people aged. And Abraham was the first one to age because he requested from Hashem that he age to differentiate himself from his son Yitzchak, because otherwise they would look identical. Ad Yaakov lo hava chusha. Before Yaakov, there was no weakness, there was no illness in the world. Ate Yaakov by Rachme Vavichusha. Yaakov asked Hashem, daven to Hashem, in order that people weaken. Shinamar, because the Pasuk says, Vayomer Yosef, Hinei Avicha Chole. Your father is ill, is sick. So until that point in time, again, we don't find that expression in the Torah. So the Gemara here is learning from that, that he was the first one to be a Chole, to be ill or to be sick. Again, the reason being that otherwise, before that point in time, a person would simply sneeze and expire. So there was no warning of the fact that this person might pass away. So what Yaakov davens for is that a person should deteriorate or degenerate a little bit towards the point of their death, so that he knows to arrange his estate, he knows to give instructions to those that are coming after him, they can say goodbye to the individual, they know that they're nearing the point of death, to get things in order before you pass away. If I was the other way around, before this point in time where people just suddenly expired, there was no warning, there was no way to organize or arrange your matters before you passed away. So that's Yaakov's request, that people deteriorate and don't simply pass away. Ad at Elisha, lovadacholish vetpach. Till the time of Elisha, there was no one who fell ill and then recovered. Meaning that what Yaakov davened for was that when a person fell ill, that was the illness from which they would die. And that was the indication that they were on their deathbed and to organize their affairs. At Elisha, bai rachme vetpach. And then Elisha davens to Hashem and is cured. Shenemar. Because the pasuk says, Ve'elisha chala et chulyo asher yamut bo. He became ill with the sickness by which he would die. So that's an extra modifier that's unnecessary. What do you mean, the sickness from which he would die? It's clear there that he fell ill and then he died afterwards. So it's clear that that is what's happening here. It's the sickness by which he would die. So michlal dechala chaliachrita. That comes to teach you this was not the first time that Elisha was sick, but rather this was the sickness that caused him to pass away. But he was sick in a previous time, which is Tanu Banan, Shlosha Chalaim Chalai Elisha. Elisha fell ill three times. Achad Shedachavto LeGechazi B'Shtei Yadav. One of them was that he punished or reprimanded Gechazi with both hands. This is an expression that the Gemara uses in general about child rearing. The Gemara says that you should be doche b'smol umikarev b'yamin. That when it comes to child rearing, one should push away with their left hand, meaning the left being the weaker hand, umikarev b'yamin, and draw the child closer with your right hand. So that means that there has to be a mix of love and direction that is given to the child. It can't simply be that you push the child away, you're just chastising the child, you're only giving them directives and there's no love involved. The Gemara requires that there be a mix of love and direction so that the child really feels that this is to their benefit and that the instructions are from a place of love. And the Gemara emphasizes that it's the right hand, the stronger hand that is doing the loving and the left hand that is doing the dechiyah. So here the expression of the Gemara, which is that Elisha was docheg legechazi b'shtei yadav, pushed away with both hands, means that he totally, in a sense, excised him or excommunicated him and distanced him from himself. And this was with the incident of Naaman. When Naaman comes to be cured from Tzara'at and Elisha cures him from Tzara'at, and then Naaman wants to pay Elisha and Elisha refuses to accept payment, afterwards Gehazi of his own volition runs after Naaman and tells him that Elisha changed his mind and that he really did want to get paid, and therefore Gehazi takes money from Naaman and then takes it for himself and hides it in his house. And when upon his return to Elisha, Elisha already has a nevuah that he did this, and he implicates Gehazi in the stealing of this money and in essence causing a chilul Hashem. And then he tells him that the tzarat of Naaman will now be on you and your children. And he basically throws Gehazi out for this misbehavior. So that's what the Gemara says, that Elisha fell ill because he didn't deal with Gehazi in the proper way. He didn't just chastise him and keep him attached. He pushed him away completely, completely dismissed him. The other reason that he fell ill is because the fact that he caused the bears to eat up the children in Yericho. That's the story right after Eliyahu is Oleh Basara Shemaima, and Elisha's on his way back. He comes to the city of Yericho. The residents of Yericho come out and ask him or beseech him to sweeten the waters that have been bitter that they haven't been able to drink. And over there were children that were disrespectful to Elisha, and they call him Baldy, Baldy. They are making fun of Elisha. Elisha takes offense to their behavior. The reason for why they're doing this, what caused the children to do this, is a much deeper discussion, but likely has to do with the change in mantle from Eliyahu to Elisha, because this is the beginning of Elisha's rise as a Navi after Eliyahu leaves. But there he then asks for two bears to come out of the forest and they come and eat up these children. So again, Hashem saw that as being too harsh a punishment that Elisha was giving. And then the third sickness, the one by which he passed away. So Chazal see the fact that the Torah says he was sick, and that was the sickness from which he died, meant that he was sick at other times. Now, Chazal then say that he was sick not just once before, but even twice before that, and they list incidents in the life of Elisha, which they see as being something more negative that Elisha did, even though Hashem does not criticize Elisha in either of these instances. He doesn't criticize him by the case of the Dubim, and Hashem even acquiesces to the miracle that Elisha asked for, was that the two bears come and take out the children. And he does whatever Elisha says and doesn't chastise him whatsoever. As well as the fact by Gehazi, Hashem doesn't say anything about that incident as well. And so therefore it's hard to argue that the Navi really views these as being negative or Hashem rebuking Elisha. Nevertheless, Chazal see from the fact that when he passed away, he was sick. From the sickness he died by, that he must have been sick earlier, and they see these two areas as being areas where they question whether Elisha's decision was proper in those situations. Shenamar, because the pasuk says Elisha chalat chayo asher yamut bo, that he became sick with the sickness from which he died, implying that there were additional sicknesses. All right, now the Gemara goes back to the Mishnah, and we leave the Agadata behind. Says Ella ad shelo yatchilu b'melacha. Save Amor Lehem. So this is the story of Rabbi Yochanan ben Matri. He tells his son to tell him before they start working, make sure you go out and retract what you said. The only thing that we're offering them is bread and legumes. Amar Leh Rav Acha Brei de Rav Yosef de Rav Chista, pat kitnit nan, o pat vikitnit nan. When he says over here, pat vikitnit with the vavachibor, or is it pat and kitnit separately without a vavachibur there. As the Baalei Tosafot point out, it's no question that Rabbi Yochanan ben Matri, when he was offering the workers pot, he was offering them pot. Vikitnit, kitnit was a side dish, an accompaniment to the bread that he was offering them. He certainly was not offering them pot kitnit. He wasn't offering them bread made from the flour of the legumes, because that's not real bread. And there's no question that he was being generous in what he was offering them, and he wasn't offering them pat kitnit. So the question really stems, as Tosafot says, is when the Mishnah says this, we assume he gave them bread and the side dish. How is it expressed? How it is expressed will then give us indications if another person uses this terminology, what do they mean? So if the Mishnah says pat kitnit without a vav, and we are interpreting that to mean that he meant bread with the legumes, with the kitnit on the side, then that means that whenever a person offers that to an individual, he says, pat kitnit, even without a vav, we interpret that to mean pat vikitnit. On the other hand, if the Mishnah says pat vikitnit, then the reason that he gave them bread and legumes is because he said pat vikitnit. That means if someone deviated it and said the language of pat kitnit without the vav in it, then we would not say that he's offering them bread and legumes. We would say rather, he's offering them bread of legumes. And so he was giving them that subpar bread. So it's a question as to the use of the terminology pat kitnit without a vav, what is the meaning of that phrase? Does it mean that phrase pat vikitnit, or does it mean that phrase pat nikitnit, literally? That will depend on what's written in our Mishnah, because we know that he gave them bread plus legumes. Depending on how it's expressed in the Mishnah, will tell us how to view the expression pat kitnit. Samalei, Elokim, but by the name of God, tzrichol vav, it definitely had a vav in there. Pat vikitnit is what's written there. Now, again, if you take it in the simple meaning, not the way that Tosfot says it, he goes, of course, he didn't give them bread made out of kitnit. Rather, he gave them bread with the kitniot. On the other hand, the way that Baalei Tosafot read it is, what he said was pat vikitnit, and therefore, if someone says pat kitnit without a vav, you couldn't learn anything from this Mishnah about it. Ki mordaya delivrot. Says, similar to either the rudder or the staff that you need for the river of Librot. So over there on the river, in order to avoid the stones and to navigate through the river, you either needed a rudder or you need some long pole to push the boat away from those dangerous areas. So just like if you're boating along the river, you need the rudder or the stick. So too, over in the Mishnah, you need the vav, just like there. And it might be that he's also playing on the shape of the vav, which is that the rudder or the pole looks like a vav. And therefore, he was also mentioning it in that context. Now, the Gemara concludes with the statement of Rabbi Shmuel in the Mishnah, which is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Eino Tzarich Akol Gmin Aga Medina. Rabbi Yochanan ben Matya did not have to do this because we have an overarching principle, which is it's all governed by what the common practice here. So even if he offered him food on top of what the normal practice here, it doesn't mean that he's giving him kesudat Shlomo HaMelech. It means that he's offering them the food like the minhag medina. Hakol atuye mai. Again, the Bavli here asks, what does this principle come to include? Atuye haditznan comes to include this. Obviously, it's probably not a Mishnah, but rather the Tanya we have in the Braita. So cherta poel, person who hires a worker, v'amalo ke'echad u'cheshnai mibnei ayir, like one or two of the city, notein lo ke'pachot shebeschirut divrei Rabbi Yoshua. He gets the least of what is offered in the city. V'chamim amrim mishamnim b'neihem, that we equalize between them. So he offered to pay the individual, these poalim, like the standard worker in the city. He just says, I'll pay you like the workers of the city. So Rabbi Yeshua says when he says that, he takes the lowest salary in the city and he pays them. Whatever the lowest salary accepted by a poel is in the city, that's what he meant. Because Amotzi Michavero Alavaraya, he offered to pay them like the workers of the city. The only thing you can assume is that that is the payment like the lowest paid worker in the city. You want to get more than that? You got to prove that that's what he meant. That's Rabbi Yeshua's view. The Chamim's view is that you take some sort of middle ground. Machloket between Rashi and the Rambam, Rashi and the Rach, as I'd explain that, I would loosely say that the difference between them is the median salary versus the mean salary. The way that the Rambam, the Rach, the Rabbeinu Chananel explain it is that you take the highest salary in town, the lowest salary in town, and then you take the average between them, the Mumutza, take the average of those two, and that's the salary that you give, which is the mean salary for the neighborhood. And then Rashi says that you, not too much, not too little, but like the middle range that is given in the city, meaning the median salary of the city is what he is giving. It's not an average necessarily. It's the middle salary that people accept. So not the highest, not the lowest, but the middle ground of salaries that were there. So again, I would describe Rashi as describing the median salary versus the Rambam and the Rabbeinu Chananel, which brought the Gra notes over here, we're asking for the average salary of the area. All right, so now we begin the next Mishnah, which is Ve'elo Ochlim Min HaTorah. These are people who are entitled to eat Min HaTorah. So here, in terms of the Poel's rights, again, we began the Perek with describing the interaction between the employer and the workers, the Poelim that are coming. What exactly is a given or determined based on their agreement? So again, if they agree to things, whatever's in the agreement, that's what governs. But they don't have agreement between them, then it becomes kiminaga medina. Then the default or protocols of that area govern the relationship between them. But there are Torah laws about the way that an individual treats his workers. One of those is that the person has to offer the workers the ability to eat while they are working in his fields. That's based on the psukim that are found in Parshat Ki Teitze, Ki Tavo Bekem Re'acha. When you come into the vineyard of your friend, V'achalta Anavim Kenafshecha Savecha, you can eat away till you are full, until you are satiated. Vel Kelyecha Lo Titein, but you may not put into your own utensils. And then the next pasuk is Ki Tavo Bekamat Re'acha. When you come into the standing grains of your friend, V'katafta Mililot Biyadecha, you can pick off the kernels with your hand. But you may not put the scythe to the standing grain of your friend. So from here, we're going to learn in this Mishnah the requirement that the employer allow the employees to benefit from the items with which they are working. There are limitations, and that's what we're going to learn in the Mishnah. But that's what the Mishnah starts out with. Ve'elo ochlim min haTorah. These are those that are entitled to eat min haTorah. The opposite side of that is those that cannot eat min haTorah. What does that mean that they cannot eat min haTorah? It means that they're not entitled from the Torah to eat in those circumstances. But if there is a minhag medina, that will govern those situations. Here we're talking about what is not necessarily governed by the minhag medina because it's a doraita requirement. So since it's a Torah requirement, it has nothing to do with the practice of the city. It has to do with the fact that the Torah commands that you do this. If it's not governed by the Torah, then the local practice becomes the governing principle for their agreement. So here it says, Elo ochlim min haTorah, hosebim mechubar lekarka. You have to be working with things that are attached to the ground, number one. Bishat gemar melacha, in the final stage of the processing of this item, in the mechubar, the karka, while it's attached to the ground. Ubetalush min akarka, and if it's already separated or taken out of the ground, ad shelo nigmara melachto, until the point in time where it reaches the chiyuv tevel, or the requirement to remove masrot and shumot from the item. So you have a window of time in which the individual is entitled to partake in that which he's working with. That is, from the final stage, gemar melacha, the final stage of when it's attached to the ground, which basically means the harvesting of the item, means the cutting of the standing grain, the picking of the fruits. That is when it begins. This opportunity to partake begins. It makes sense. Because until that point in time, the items are not ripe. And so therefore, there's no reason to grant the individual, if he's weeding in the field, if he's doing things in the field, he doesn't have a right to take the fruits. When he has a right to take the fruits is at the time that you are harvesting the fruits. From that time, if he's engaged with work with these items, until the point in time where they become chayav and masrot, that is the window in which, if a worker is engaged with these fruits, he has a right to eat those fruits. And that's what the Mishnah just described, is number one, the requirement of mechuber lekarka, and number two is the window in which the mechuber lekarka you are entitled to deal with. That's from the moment of the harvesting until the point in time where it becomes chayav and masrot. Ubedavar shegidulo min aretz. The other requirement is that it be something that grows from the ground. That means if you're milking cows, you're not entitled to take the milk from the cows. It has to be something that grows from the ground, that this is the heter that the Torah gives. These are people who are not entitled to eat. Again, it should be obvious, if you're not entitled to eat, then what does it mean that you don't eat? Some are works with items that are attached to the ground, meaning before or prior to the point of harvest, if you're working in the field, that doesn't mean that you're entitled. Rashi gives example, someone's weeding amongst the onions. That doesn't give you a right to eat the onions just because you're weeding in the onions. Something that is not the final process that you are working in. Again, that's the weeding process, or things that you did up until the point of the harvest with the mechuber, the karka, you're not entitled to. Ubu talush min karka me'achash nigmar melachto. As well as things that are talush min karka after nigmar melachto. After the processing is done to the point by which you're now chayav in masrot. Again, depending on the item or the product, it'll be different for each item. Rashi mentions nitparsu ag igulav, as when they pressed out the figs into circles. So here he's talking about the fruits. But each item has its own, which is mentioned in the Mishnayot. When you go to Trumot and Masrot, you can see in the Mishnayot, it goes through each different item, what's considered to be the Onata Maser and the Gemar Malocha for Maser. B'davar she'en gidulo min aretz. And another exemption is a case when it doesn't grow from the ground, as we noted before, when you're milking a cow, you don't have a right to take the milk. So the Gemara wants to know, Menahane Mile. The Mishnah gives us parameters, but where did it get these parameters from? So Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, Ki tavo bekerem reacha, that's what we read before, when you come into the vineyard of your friend, v'achalta, and then you eat. Ashkechan kerem. So now we know that this is true about a vineyard. Kol mile minolon. How do we know that this extends to items beyond the vineyard? Kamrina and mikerem. We use kerem as a paradigm, and we learn from that. Ma kerem yuchad, tavar shegidulei karka. Just like a vineyard is something that is unique in the sense that it has these character traits. One of, number one is that it grows from the ground. Ubshad gemar melacha poelo chelbo. At the time of the finishing of the work that is attached to the ground, that's when the poel eats. Afko davar shegidulei karka b'shad gemar melacha poelo chelbo. So too will apply or extend that to any item that grows from the ground. And is at the time of the finishing of the melacha, that's what a worker is allowed to eat from. Here the Gemara takes it for granted that the Gemar melacha is the point in time. The Gemara in a second will ask, how do you know that's when you're allowed to eat from the vineyard? Where do you get that from the pasuk that you're allowed to only eat at the time of the harvest and not before or prior to that point in time? Ba'al kerem sheken chayav ba'ololot. He says, wait a minute, kerem has a unique aspect to it, which is that it has a chiyuv matanot aniyim that are associated with ololot, which is unique to the kerem. That's one of the matanot aniyim that doesn't apply to standing grains or to fruits, the ololot, which are the grapes that are left over, the grapes that are not what's called katef and natef. They're not part of bunches, they're not part of a stack of grapes, they're these individual grapes that are just alone on the vine. Those are part of the matanot aniyim. So how you can't extend from kerem, because kerem has a certain chumrah that's associated with it, where the ba'alim, as Rashi notes, have already lost ownership over a part of the kerem. They've lost ownership over the ololot, So maybe the din of a poel being able to eat there also applies there, because the Baalim have, quote-unquote, less ownership over the kerem, because the matnot ha'naim that are taken from the kerem are greater than the matnot ha'naim from other areas, because the olalot are included in those items that you are disowned from and given to the ha'naim. So maybe the same thing is with regards to the poel. Where it says, gamrina mikama. We learn it out from the next pasuk, which says, ki tavo bekamat be'acha. Where it says, kama gufa min yalan. How do you know that kama itself? When you go into the standing, growing areas of your friend, and you're allowed to then pick the kernels in your hand. Wait a minute, how can you learn from kama? Kama has also a unique aspect to it, which is there's a matana from grain that doesn't exist by other items, which is the chala. You don't separate of chala except from the five chamisha midei dagan. So maybe kama has this unique aspect to it that the poel is entitled to it, because again, you're going to lose more of this. You were disowned from more of it because part of it has to be given to the kohen, the chala. So that's a chumrah by grains, and maybe that's what generates the necessity to give it to the poel, but you can't extrapolate from that because it's not a paradigm. Umimai dahai kama, kama demitchayevet bechalahi. Mar says, wait a minute, how do you know that the kama over here is a kama that is speaking about the five grains upon which you are chayav v'chala. Standing items is not just grains, the chamisha mei dagan. You have other items that also have a kama, even though they're not chayav in chala. Dilma kol kama kamai rachmana. Maybe the Torah meant anything that stands in the field. Where it says, achya kama kama. We have a gzereshov of kama kama, v'chtiv ocha kitavo b'kamat reacha. So here it speaks about when you go into your friend's field with the standing harvest. It says by the Omer, from the time that the scythe begins to go to the kama. Over there we know that the grain that is used for the minchat Omer is barley. So just like over there, the word kama is in the context of something that is chayav minchala. Nami kama. So to over here, we're talking about kama that is involved with chala. The Gemara in a second is going to reject this, which raises issues about gzeirah shavuot in general. In general, we believe that a gzeirah shavuot ain't adam dan me'atzmo. A person is not allowed to make up a gzeirah shavuot. He needs a mesorah for a gzeirah shavuot. Now the Gemara is going to reject this gzeirah shavuot. Once the Gemara rejects the gzeirah shavuot, then you have to explain why it is that the Gemara had this gzeirah shavuot, because otherwise, it seems to indicate that the person made up the gzeirah shavuot, and it wasn't something that he had been mesorah. So the Rishonim deal with it in different ways, either explaining that they knew there was a gzeirah shavuot about kama kama, or the way the Rabbeinu Tam explains it, they knew there was a gzeirah shavuot about the word kama, they just didn't know where it applied, and so therefore they're searching for the application of it, and they're speculating that this is the one of the places that it might have applied. That's the way that the Ramban and other Rishonim deal with it. Rabbeinu Tam and other places in Shas offers an alternative, which is the fact that they had a certain number of gzeirah shavuot that they knew that were learned, and they didn't have the exact gzeirah shavuot, but they knew there was a total number. And so therefore they are maneuvering around to figure out where the gzeirah shavuot are or where to apply them. So therefore you find in the Gemara, even though gzeirah shavuot you can't do by yourself, we still find the Gemara testing or trying to figure out what the gzeirot shavuot are, either because they knew a total number, they didn't know the exact ones, or they knew about a word that had a gzeirot shavuot, they just don't know where it applied. So again, they're testing the waters with regards to this. Where it says, ikal mifrach, you can break that down. Malakama, shekein chayevet b'chala. So now you have a problem, which is that you can't extrapolate from kama, because there it has a unique feature of being chayevet in chala. Kerem yochiach. So then, if you bring in kerem, that will prove that that is not true. Malik kerem shekein chayev ba'ololot. Kerem has a din of matnot aniyim that doesn't apply by other items. Kama tochiach. Then kama will disprove that point. What we're saying is that you are speculating that there's a chumrah here that generates the need for you to give the poel the right to eat. By the kerem, we say, is the fact that you have to give ololot, which means you're disowned from a portion of your harvest. So maybe over here, that's why the poel gets a right, because we have an easier time disowning you from your kerem. By the chala, by the kama also, Maybe the reason you have to give it there is because of the fact that you have to give challah later, which means that you're, again, you're disowned from more of the item. So maybe that entitles the poel to eat from it. So now you have a chumrah by each of them. So now maybe that chumrah is what generates the din. The answer is, well, I have each one of them, and neither of them share the same chumrah. So what that comes from that is because they're a din. Therefore, you can go back and forth. Lo rei zeh kerei zeh. The chumrah of this one is not like the chumrah of this one. Hatzadah sheveh shebehen. The common denominator between them is shekein davar shei gedulei karka. They're both items that grow from the ground. Ubishat gmar malacha poel ochel bo. At the time of the harvest, the poel has a right to eat from it. So therefore, I use that as a paradigm, as a binyan av, to establish av kol davar shei gedulei karka bishat gmar malacha poel ochel bo. Anything that grows from the ground, then the poel has a right to eat from it. So what we do is we say, you're telling me that each one of them has a chumrah. And that chumrah is maybe what generates the din. The fact that I have two examples that have different chumrot shows me that the chumrah is not what is driving the case, because otherwise you can't explain the other one. So I take the two of them together, the common denominator between them is that the chumrot don't matter, and that the common denominator governs, which is that as long as you're growing from the ground, that you're a charek mar malacha, a poel has a right to eat from that item. So Gemara says, wait a minute. There is a common denominator between them, which is a chumrah, which will preclude us from having the ability to learn with a binyan av. And that is that both of them have a tzad mizbeach, which is that they both end up on the mizbeach. The wine ends up on the mizbeach as a wine libation, so grapes are in the process of something that will end up in the mizbeach. And with regards to the grains, we have the wheat and the barley that end up on the mizbeach. Now the truth is that it's not totally true, because you have the five grains that are called kama, yet only two out of those five grains end up on the mizbeach. What you have to say is that their category ends up on the mizbeach. Grains end up on the mizbeach. Grapes end up on the mizbeach. That means that that common denominator now becomes a chumrah that they share. Since they share that chumrah, then maybe that's what generates the necessity to give it to the poel. And so now we're suggesting is that you have to have a tzad mizbeach to end up in this din of the poel's right to eat bishat gemar melacha. So then you would say, okay, va'at anami zayit to eat beit tzad mizbeach. If that's the case, you could have included olives, which also have a tzad mizbeach, which is they are the shemen that ends up in the menachot on the mizbeach. So at least with regards to olives, you could have included them from the vineyard with the grapes and the kama with the grains. But that's all you could have included. You couldn't include anything else because they don't have a tzad mizbeach. Marzez, v'zayit v'me'at tzad ati? Do you really need a binyan av, a me'at tzad, to teach you that olives are included in those items that are subject to this din of a poel having the right to eat? Hu gufei keramikre. Olives are called a vineyard as well. So it says there that they destroyed from the gadish, means that they piles, the silos, to the kama, that standing grain, vad kerem zayit. It calls it a vineyard of olives. So you see that olives also have the word kerem, so they'll be included in the pasuk when it says, ki tavo b'kerem reyacha. When you go into the vineyard of your friend, that's not just a grape vineyard, it also means a olive vineyard. My answer is, Amar Papa, kerem zayit ikre, kerem stam alo ikre. Yes, zayit can be called a vineyard, but that's only as a noun phrase. It's called kerem zayit. But if you just say kerem by itself, a vineyard by itself, the default word kerem only means grapes. It doesn't mean zayit. And that's why the Navi has to go out of its way to explain to you that there was a kerem zayit, because the word kerem by itself would not have been sufficient to teach you that. It says, mikol makom kasha. We're still in a bind now because we only have grapes, olives, and grains that would be included under this din based on the limud that you have until now. Elamar Shmuel, Elamar Kra. Shmuel says, the pasuk says, v'chermesh, that the scythe. The rabot kol balei chermesh, to teach you anything that is subject to a scythe, to a harvesting by the scythe, that is included in this din. Vai chermesh mi balei. Wait a minute, you need the word chermesh in the pasuk to teach you something else. It does. It says, "Ki davo b'kamat riecha v'katapt milot biyadecha v'chermesh lo tanif al kamat riecha." You may not put the scythe to the standing grain of your friend. The Gemara now is learning from the word chermesh that teaches you anything subject to the scythe is something that is chayav in this din. The Gemara says, "I need the word chermesh to teach me b'shat chermesh achol shlo b'shat chermesh lo techol." This is how I know that it's only at the time of gemar malacha that the poel has a right to eat it, because it's saying at the time of the scythe, that's when you have a right to eat. When's the time of the side? That's the time of the harvest. Otherwise, you don't have a right to eat. So I already used the word chemesh for another din. Now that you learn from the previous pasuk, which says you may not put it into your basket. From that you learn out that when you're putting it into the basket of the balabayit, you have a right to take it. Oh, we can't fill your baskets with it, but you can take it. When is the time that you're filling the basket of the balabayit? That's at the time of the harvest. So already from the previous pasuk, I know when it is that you're chayav to allow the poel to eat. That is at the time the kel yecha lo titain, meaning that at the time that he puts it into the keli of the balabayit, that's when he has a right to eat it. Mar says, so now I have the word chemesh left over, and that word chemesh, it'll teach me anything that has a side that is brought to it will be chayav. Mar again says, that's limited because tinach devar chemesh. That works well with something that's cut by the side. Tala ber chemesh menalon. How do I know if it's not something that is cut by the side? How do I know that that is also included? For instance, onions, items that grow under the ground, root vegetables, cucumbers, zucchinis, all these items that are not cut by the side and are not picked like the fruits. They're not a kerem. So then how do I know to include those items? So Amar Yitzchak Amar Kro, Kama, the Rabot, Kol Balei Kama. Kama comes to include any standing item. Amar says, Amar Kama Kama, Demichayva Bechalo. Didn't you already teach us that Kama Kama is Exer Shava to teach you that it's Chayavet in Chala, only items that are chayav in chala. Where it says, Hanimile me kamidinete chermesh. That was before we got to the word chermesh. Once we got to the word chermesh, which expands the scope of the din, then you can no longer say it's limited to items that are chayav in chala. Because the word chermesh says it applies to anything that's cut by the side, even if it's not subject to chala. Once I've done that, then I knocked out this gezerah shava. Once I knocked out the gezerah shava, the word kama is now available for a limud. So hashta de'ate chermesh, it's rabbi lay called devar chermesh. It came to include all devar chermesh, and that leaves over the word kama now. The word chermesh comes to teach you that anything that is subject to the side is something that is chayav in this din, irrespective of whether it's chayav in chala. Once you've done that, kama lomali. So then what do I need the word kama for if I'm not using it for the gzirishava anymore? Rabot kolabale kama. To come to teach you anything that grows as a standing item, that is subject to this din. So now Gemara says, now that I learned out from chermesh v'kama to learn about everything, meaning that I include anything that's subject to the side, as well as anything that stands, is a standing growth. So all of those are subject to this din, then kitavo b'kerem re'echa lomali. Then what do I need the whole story about the kerem, about the vineyard? Amarobo lehil chutav. That comes to teach you specific dinim over here from that pasuk. And we're going to see here in the breita that we're about to bring that there are specific dinim that are learnt out from this pasuk. All right, so Tosfot over here points out that despite the Gemara's answer now, he still says, why do you need the word kerem? Even if you're going to teach me all the dinim, the word kerem is not necessary here. And he answers here something he's going to repeat over and over again through this amud, which he says, b'shem itzrich le l'shum drasha. Maybe they need it for some drasha. So Tosfot indicates here by the word kerem, and later on he's going to mention it also by the word reyacha, that these words seem extraneous, and even though we have something to learn from either the pasuk or from one of the words, it seems that we have a lot of these words left over, and Tosfot keeps saying, maybe there is shem l'shum drasha itzrichle. There must be some drasha they need it for, even though we're not aware of the drasha. So he says that about the word kerem here as well. Kedetanya, kitavo, nemar, kan biyat, v'nemar lahalan, lo tovo alav ashemesh. And later on it says that you should not allow the sun to set on him. Malalan bepuel akatuv mendaber, af kan bepuel akatuv mendaber. How do you know that this din of kitavo bekerem reyacha is only dealing with a worker, with an employee that is coming in? So the answer is that we have this kitavo. When you come, what does it mean you come into your friend's vineyard? It doesn't mean simply when you walk into your friend's vineyard. It means when you are there as a worker. How do I know that? From the Gzeres Shava of sorts, or call it a Giloy Milta, that the Kitavo here relates to the Lotavo Alava Shemesh that is mentioned by the Poel in the next parak. So just like over there, it's talking about a worker, so to over here, it's talking about a worker. Bekerem Reacha, Velo Bekerem Kuti. In your friend's vineyard, but not in the vineyard of the Kuti. That could have implications in two ways. Rashi over here says that Bekerem Reacha means that your kerem is subject to this din, but by the kerem kuti, it is not subject to this din, which means that the limitation is not applicable over there, which is that by the kerem kuti, you can even put it into your keli. On the other hand, the ritva says that it is a complete hafka from the mitzvah. A kerem kuti is not subject to this din whatsoever because he's not chayav in mitzvot. So there's no din whatsoever that applies over here in terms of the limitations and the scope and all that's mentioned over here, because it's a din that applies to a Jew or a Baal mitzvot. All right, so now Gemara says, Hanicha the mandamar gezel kuti asur. That makes sense according to one who says stealing from a kuti is asur. Hanu de itzrikra, the mishrei poel. That's why you need a pasuk to say to the poel, the worker, that he does have a right to take from these field, because for a Jew it would be problematic. If you were in a Jewish field, he wouldn't let you take it because the Torah does not permit it. So here when we have the Kerem Re'acha, it comes to teach you that the Kerem Re'acha has these limitations, but in a Kerem Kuti there are no limitations and you can eat whenever you're in there. You have a right as a poel to take or eat, and it's not considered to be gezel. Elamanda mar gezel kuti mutar, according to one who says that stealing from a kuti is mutar, hashtag zela mutar poel mi baye. Outright stealing is mutar, then why would you have to worry about a worker? So Gemara says, Mukim la b'kerem re'acha v'lo shel hekdesh. Comes to teach you that it's in your friend's field and not that of hekdesh. Alright, so now, a number of items to discuss here. First of all, what is the Gemara speaking about, whether stealing from a kuti is mutar or asur? We actually saw a machloka like this in Baba Kama on Daf Yud Gimel, Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Rashi quotes that as to the source of the Gemara over here, which is that the machloket over there, whether gezel goy is mutar or asur, he says that's what the Gemara is referencing to over here. The Baal Yad Tosafot take issue with that, because if you remember back to that Gemara on Kuf Yud Gimel and Aleph, the machloket there only revolved around hafkat halvato, which is that there it did not permit outright stealing from the goy. The question was whether if a mistake is made, or in a case where you don't make repayment, in those situations, is that considered to be a problem of Gezel HaGoy or not considered to be a problem of Gezel HaGoy? So Tosafot says that's not applicable over here. Over there, we were talking about passive stealing. Over here, you're talking about active stealing, which is here you're going to take items from his field and eat them. So you can't compare the machloket that is brought in Baba Kama to what the Gemara is discussing over here. And therefore, Tosafot references the Gemara later on in Baba Metzia on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Bet, where there the Gemara has a person or a dayah that is matir gezel agoy legamre, not just in a passive hafkat halvato scenario, but even in an active form, he's matir gezel agoy. And that's what the Gemara is referencing over here, which is anicha, the mandamar, that gezel agoy is problematic. According to that mandamar later in our Masechta that says that gezel agoy is mutar, why do you need a limud to allow the poel to eat from the field? He could steal and it wouldn't be a problem. So that's why we're forced then to say, according to that mandamar, that we're talking about kerem re'acha v'lo shel hekdesh. Again, I'll just, for the sake of repeating what we said in the Gemara and Baba Kama, we don't paskin like that dayah that gezel agoy is mutar. And there is a machloket about hafkat halvato, but seemingly we do paskin that hafkat halvato is mutar. On the other hand, we have an overarching principle, which is that if there's any chilul Hashem that can be caused, then for sure you're not allowed to do it. Even if it's permitted, hafkat halvato, nevertheless, if there's going to be a chilul Hashem, you're not permitted to do it. And even more so, if there's going to be a kiddush Hashem that's generated when you do return or you do what you're supposed to do in those cases, then of course it's incumbent upon you to create a kiddush Hashem. And the Rishonim speak about this. I always quote the Smag with regards to a Shabbat Aveda, even though there's no requirement of a Shabbat Aveda to a goy. Nevertheless, he says you should return it because that will demonstrate why we are unique people and why we are deserving of the Hashkachat Hashem. And others argue also in the Rishonim that they saw that anybody who did Hafkat Avoto of a goy, who was benefiting from money that he withheld from a goy in any way, that they were never matzliach, they were never successful. And so again, the Rishonim, despite the quote-unquote permissibility of Hafkat Halvato, see it as being something that is not beneficial, and in most cases likely a Chilul Hashem, and therefore they don't permit it because of those overarching issues or problems. Now with regards to Kerem Re'acha V'lo Shel Hekdesh, it's very interesting because that means that we would have a Havamina, that a poel is allowed to eat from a field of hekdesh. Why should that be the case? Hekdesh is hekdesh. And the Poel has no right to eat that which is Hekdesh. The Gemara needs a specific limud to teach you that this din of the Poel doesn't apply to Hekdesh. So Tosafot gives us what would have been the Havamina, which is Sakadatcha. Ki'eken dishori rachmane iser gezel, shochel mishol chavero. Just like the Torah waived the din of gezel in your friend's field and you're allowed to eat while you're harvesting in his field, so too it also would waive the issue of Hekdesh. The fact that the Torah waives ownership may mean that it waives ownership in the case of a lay person, but it also waives ownership in the case of Hekdesh. And Hekdesh is removed from the ownership in order to allow the Poel to eat. That would have been the Havamina. The Maskana is, no, that we say Re'acha v'lo shel Hekdesh. So now the Brayta continues to Darshan in the Pasuk. It says, V'achalta v'lo motzeitz anavim. You're allowed to eat the grapes that you're picking, but you're not allowed to squeeze the grapes that you are picking. V'lo anavim v'davar acher. And you're not allowed to put a condiment or put the grapes together with something else in order to ease the eating of the grapes. So for instance, he describes over here putting salt on the grapes. The grapes are very sweet. If you salt the grapes to diminish the sweetness, you'd be able to eat more of the grapes. So you're not allowed to do that. Kinaf shecha, at your pleasure. Kinefesh shel balabayit, kach nafsho shel poel. Just like the balabayit does it at his will or pleasure, so too the poel. Ma nafshecha uchel upator. Just like the balabayit can eat away and has no questions about it. You're not chayav in shemot masro because you're eating it awry. Nobody can stop you because you're the owner of the field. Ap nafsho shel poel uchel upator. So too, the poel at will can eat, and he is patur, meaning that he doesn't have to give trumot umasrot. And we also don't consider it as if it's a mekach. One of the things that generates a gemar malacha to force you to be chayav in trumot umasrot is mecher, is a sale. So we don't view this as salary equivalent or as a sale to the poel so that he be chayav in trumot umasrot, but rather we say that he is patur. Just as the balabayit has rights to eat over here, and nobody can question his ownership, and he's not chayav in trumot umasrot, the poel steps into the shoes of the balabayit and acts like a balabayit now. Therefore, he's not considered to be chayav in trumot umasrot. It's not as if there was a transaction, and he's also able to eat at will. Savecha, till you are satisfied, v'lo achila gasa. You're allowed to eat until you're satisfied. You're not allowed to eat in an excessive, gluttonous manner, because that's not called achila. Ve'el kel yecha lo titein. You may not place it into your basket. When you're placing the items into the basket of the balabayit, that means when you're picking on his behalf, that's when you could eat. But when you're not processing things for the balabayit, meaning you're not picking on his behalf, then you're not entitled to eat. If you're weeding in the field, that doesn't give you a right to eat because you're not putting into the basket of the balabayit. It's the other thing, right? You have to eat them on the spot. You can't put them into your basket to take home with you. You have a right to eat while you're working, while you're in process and in the field. You don't have a right to store it for later. And that's what El Keli Echalo Titein. This isn't a right to pick on your own behalf. It's just a right while you're there and picking for the balabayit. You have a right to eat as much as you want while you're in the field up to the point where you're satisfied. But you can't take it home. It's not a alternative salary for you where you can just pick as much as you want and take one for me, one for the balabayit. So truth is that achila gasa, as Tosfot points out, would already been excluded from the word v'achalta, because achila gasa is lo shmei achila. So Tosfot says, well, now that we have a different way to darshan it, which is from the word savecha, then we have the word achalta to be extraneous, and from that I learn out that you have to eat it and not squeeze it into your mouth. So he says, ein ochanami, we would have learned from the word achila, not achila gasa, but now that we have another way to learn it, it leaves the word achalta open for another drusha. All right, we're going to stop here on the last line of Pei Zayin Amud Bet.